What I'd like to do is try to take the board through those documents briefly, just to try to tell the story of how this all fits together. So I'll try to be as brief as possible. As you can see, there's a lot of material here. Bryce and Gail Malloy bought this property in 2012, about 4 years ago. Mr. Malloy is a chemical and environmental engineer. He's visited St. George for about 40 years. His wife, Gail, is from a family that's been in St. George for over 250 years. He and Gail purchased this property and wanted to be able to put several boats in the water. Two kayaks, about 14 feet in length, an 11-foot rubber duck, and a 15-foot canoe. The problem is that the shoreline area on his lawn is steep. It's rocky. It's slippery. You can drag the 150-pound boat across the rocks and into the water, but it takes a lot of exertion. It's difficult to do. It's dangerous to do. He's fallen a few times. I think Mrs. Malloy said, that's it. We need to put in a dock if you're going to continue to use the water. So the whole purpose here is so that Mr. Malloy can have safe access to the water along shore of his property for the two kayaks, the rubber duck, and the canoe. That's it. What he would like to be able to do is use the tide that's there. It's about 5.5 to 6 hours, as he stated in several times before the planning board. About 5.5 to 6 hours of tide, each tide, is available for him to use. He would like to be able to use that to get to the water for safe access. There are mud flats. It does mud out every now and again, but it does that elsewhere in St. George as well. So we'll talk about that a little later. But if you're going to construct a float or a ramp, you need to know what your authority is. You need to know how to go about it, what to ask Mr. Brackett, the code enforcement officer, for. And your first stop is the shoreline zoning ordinance, right here. The town has a shoreline zoning ordinance, as most main municipalities do, because the state requires you to adopt one, or it will adopt one and force it to employ it. It's the only zoning that's required statewide. And what it requires with regard to areas within 250 feet of the water is if you're going to build something that sticks out over the water from land, you need a permit. Under the state model guidelines, a seasonal permit you get from the code enforcement officer and a permanent one from the planning board. St. George made a little change in that so that both a seasonal dock, float, ramp, and a permanent one require planning board approval. So, when you look at the ordinance, you look at the table of uses, and you see piers, docks, wharves, bridges, and other structures and uses extending over or out over below normal high water line are permitted uses with planning board approval in all districts of the town. All districts. So what are the standards? Well, you look under the standards for piers, docks, wharves, bridges, and you find there are 10 standards that are used by the planning board in evaluating one of these applications. And then for any shoreline permit, there are another 9 standards under Section 16D. But when you look at 15C, the ones that apply particularly to piers, docks, and wharves, it's really the first 5 that we're concerned about because 6 through 9 talk about buildings that are on or abutting a pier. We're not putting a building on it. And 10 talks about removal of vegetation. We're not removing vegetation. So it's really 5C, 1 through 5, and the 6D9 standards that would apply to this application. That's what the law is. That's the ordinance that's to be enforced. The Malloy's property is largely in marine residential. A little bit of it is in resource protection. Where the dock is proposed to be placed is entirely in marine residential. But again, it doesn't matter because a dock is actually permitted in both districts. But to be clear, this is in marine residential. And you find that there's a table in 17D in the record that shows the area, that shows the marine residential, and shows the resource protection. The burden back before the planning board is on us as the applicant. We have to prove our case. We have to get the shoreland permit. So the Malloys submitted their first application in June of this year. It was for a ramp. And a float. The ramp, 32 feet long, 3 feet wide, and a 12 by 20 float. The idea is that the ramp actually is at an angle because it's coming down from a steep area and going onto a float. So when you're looking at how far it extends beyond normal high water, you have to take into consideration that part of that ramp is above high water on land. And part of it, because it's on an angle, it isn't the horizontal length. So you don't add 32 and 20 and come up with 32. Actually, it's at an angle. It was going to extend about 28, 29 feet into the water. It was going to be perpendicular to the shore. It's going to stick right out, jut right out in marine residential. So the planning board discussed the application, had a site visit on the 25th of July. They noted and during a site visit that that float would be usable easily 5 to 5.5 hours per tide. There was a planning board meeting on the 26th. At that meeting, there was a lot of confusion. People were talking about a dock up here, something permanent, 150 feet long, that would interfere with water traffic, would intrude at least 50 feet into the water. That wasn't the case, and Mr. Brackett said at that meeting that the harbor master had no issues with navigation. The chair of the planning board cited her concerns about mud flats and bird habitat. The meeting was tabled, but Mr. Molloy was left with the impression that he needed to reduce the length of this dock. And so he did, filed a revised application on April 2nd. And that 32-foot ramp became a 30-foot ramp. And he took that 12 by 20 float and turned it around so that it was only 12 feet in its length. Shortened it to about 21 feet for a protrusion out into the cove at an area where the cove is about 250 feet in width. The code enforcement officer said at that time, there are a number of floats in St. George now in areas very similar to this area. There are also some permanent piers in areas that are very similar to this. But an audience member said this would be the first float in Watts Cove. That's not true. Mr. Stern admitted in that same meeting that he's had a float. It turns out to be 4x8. He's used it. It's been in the water several years. Gene Boanchek has a float. It hasn't been in the water for the past couple of years, but had been in the water prior to that. It was a ramp and float, 16 feet and 12 feet in length together. There were arguments that were brought up, not dealing with the float length. Some people were explaining that the Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife has designated this area of Watts Cove to be high or moderate tidal waterfowl and wading bird habitat. That it was that the comprehensive plan had identified the lower St. George River basin and mudflats as migratory shorebird habitat, that the comprehensive plan had identified coastal wetland concentration areas, that DEP lists coastal wetlands as wetlands of special significance, that the Conservation Commission had listed Watts Cove as significant ecological area, that the Georges Land Trust has a conservation easement in the area. Well, arguments were also made about the floats grounding out. Again, the code enforcement officer said that the planning board had permitted a pier in Mosquito Cove the prior year that grounds out several times, several hours per day. With all of that, the planning board denied the application 5-0. When you read the minutes of that meeting, you see that the planning board had a motion to deny. They made the motion. It passed 5-0. There was no motion to adopt findings of fact or conclusions of law to support that decision. In fact, when we got a chance to take a look at the record this week, you look at item number one. It's our initial application, but it's got the actual planning board decision written on it. And there's a page that has the chair, Ken Cox's signature here, and Terry Brackett, code enforcement officer's signature here. And it's dated 8-10. The meeting was August 9th. And it says, approval or denial of application denied. And it says, reason for denial, section 15C5. The facility shall be no longer in dimension than necessary to carry on the activity and be consistent with the surrounding character and uses of the area. That's it. That's the standard. All they did was carry out the standard. Those are not findings of fact, not conclusions of law. They didn't adopt any in the meeting itself. Well, we explained that they needed to have adopted findings of fact and conclusions of law, and we got back something a little different, which is that same sheet, but with a notation added of over, and when you turn over, it talks about all the environmental issues, but not about the length. So the board never voted to adopt that decision, so we either have a decision that's conclusory with no findings of fact and conclusions of law, or a decision with findings that weren't adopted by a board but were added to a decision later. I don't know what it is, but Maine's Freedom of Access Act in Section 407 requires any denial to be in writing and to in writing state the reasons for the denial, conclusions of law, findings of fact to support that decision so that a reviewing body, such as you, knows what happened below. There's also a requirement in the law court case, the Maine State Supreme Court case of Kamoa v. Town of Kittery, that a board put together findings that would allow review. The decision doesn't do what it's supposed to do. I'm not sure which is the final decision. All I know is that we had to file an appeal, and we filed an appeal with what we had. Either way, the planning board erred in making that decision. So an appeal was filed, but at the same time, the Molloys just want to be able to put a dock out. They heard from the planning board it needed to be smaller. They had a 32-foot ramp. They brought it down to 30. They had the 20-foot width. They turned it around to a 12-foot width. They came back with a second application and asked you to table that first appeal so that they could try to come in and do the right thing and just get this approved. In the meantime, the Molloys filed an application and received four moorings from the harbor master just to be able to get out in the water and use it. So the second application is in the record. It's item 13. The proposal was for something different. A 26-foot ramp. And then a 12 by 16 float. The float would stick out 12 feet, 16 feet wide. The ramp would be attached to granite, nothing driven into the ground, attached to bolts on granite. The structure would be nearly parallel to the shore, at a slight angle. It would not be perpendicular to the shore. It was tucked in by the rocks. If you can see pictures in the record taken from the water outside the stern property, you look across to where this is. We've been told to put balloons out there. You can barely see the balloons past the rocks. So this is hardly going to be visible from the stern property. The record confirms that. Now, Attorney Gibbons argues that we couldn't bring this request, that the planning board shouldn't have heard this because you can't bring a second request without a substantial change in circumstance. Well, that applies. In the absence of an ordinance allowing a second application, if it's a special exception, if it's a variance. This is not a special exception. This is not a variance. This is just like filing a second building permit because the CEO said you couldn't build your garage the way you wanted to the first time. There's no bar on that. And even if there were any such bar, even if you were to read that in, this is a substantial change. The angle is different. The length is different. It is a way of trying to accommodate the concerns of the planning board and the neighbors. When we filed that application, we also ran it by the Department of Environmental Protection. The Molloys hired Stantec. Brian Emerson, who is a wetland scientist, wrote to DEP. DEP said they did not have jurisdiction over this. That's in the record as well. You'll find that under section item 13 here. The planning board held a hearing, a site visit on the 24th, and then a public hearing on the 25th. That public hearing, and you can read the minutes, there are about 35 pages in here. Mr. Molloy introduced Brian Emerson, the wetland scientist, and also provided a little overview. But Mr. Emerson, it's important to note, in his letter, it's in his reply letter to some of the materials submitted by the Stearns, and also in his own testimony, said that the seasonal ramp and float that was being proposed would not require DEP review. That although the cove, Watts Cove, has been designated by the Department of Indian Fisheries and Wildlife as being high to moderate value for tidal waterfowl and wading bird habitat, it never comes into play here. That is something, that designation, that gets reviewed for impact if you have to apply for a DEP permit. We do not have to apply for a DEP permit. So there's no DEP jurisdiction. There's no opportunity for DIFW to come in and do the evaluation. For the same reason, the consideration that this is a coastal wetland does not come into play. The ramp and float, as Mr. Emerson said, would not cause more human activity. There are already four boats out there, and there are other people who operate their boats out in the cove as well. It simply provides more convenient access for going closer to the shore. The area of the ramp and float would be less than 400 square feet in a code that's 14 acres in area. Mr. Emerson gave his opinion that that ramp and float has no impact on nesting habitat. It's in the water. Nesting occurs in trees or on the ground. It would not be occurring on the water. The floats the float that we would put in the water would be on skids to minimize any sedimentation that might occur as the tide goes in and out. That ramp and float, as I said, would be tangled and nestled along the shore, which is exactly as Dr. Podolsky, who submitted a letter with regard to this project, had suggested. The birds, Mr. Emerson said, would become used to these structures, which is exactly what Mr. Stern's biologist, Paul Liebert, noted. And then we said that we would apply for Army Corps of Engineers approval, because this is something that would require a permit. It's minimal, but we will apply for that. Mr. Molloy testified, first of all, if you take a look at the PowerPoint in item 22 in the back, you'll find some photographs at the end. Those are birds, waterfowl, that are on the property, despite humans being in the area, despite four boats being on the water on moorings. There are birds. They do come in close to shore, within 20 feet of the shore. There are photographs to show. Mr. Molloy explained, first of all, why he needs this float. Again, it's for safety of access. What he proposes to do is take the two boats and put them on top of the float. The ramp has to go down to the float. The float helps support the ramp, so the float can only be so small. Even the planning board member noted that below. When you take the canoe, 4 foot beam, the rubber duck, 5.5 foot beam, and the stairway, 3.5 feet, that's 13 feet total out of 16 foot width. It leaves 1.5 feet for an aisle in there, and that's it for width. So 16 feet is narrow. It will accommodate what he wants to do. 12 feet is again, the boats are about that length. This is as close, he said, to the board below, as he could get the ramp float into normal high water and still be able to walk down that ramp and attach that ramp. So he's trying to pull this, make this as small as possible, as close to the shore as possible, and to nestle it at an angle so that it is visible as little as possible. Mr. Molloy also described other floats in the cove, and again, we have Mr. Stern's float. I understand it's not in the water currently, but it has been in the water in the past, 4 feet by 8 feet. There's even a photograph at R19 on his website showing that float to the right. The Belanchik property, 16-foot ramp, 12-foot float. It is not in the water right now. It hasn't been for a couple of years. It had been in years previous. And Mr. Molloy came down to town hall to take a look. What other floats are there in town? And what he learned is that there are some 107 floats and ramps in the town of St. George. And he found 10 of them, just as examples, that are in areas that also are designated by the Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife as being for tidal waterfowl and for wading bird habitat. There's the Crockett home on Walston Road with a 42-foot protrusion, and it's a pier, dock, or wharf. In this case, it was approved by the town planning board and by DEP in 2011. Mill Cove, there are two floats, one 30-foot, the other 36-foot in length. Has town and DEP permits. That was permitted in 2012. Mosquito Cove, it's a permanent ramp, 45 feet, town and DEP permits in 2015, and it has mud flats. CV Cove, 80-foot ramp and dock near a dam. Otis Cove, 50 and 30-foot lengths. Cutler Cove, 50-foot length in mud flats. Skinner Cove, 24-foot ramp, 24-foot float, and it's near Georges River Land Trust coastline. Planning Board received arguments that the float is too large. Area muds out. The cove is different from the ocean front. Birds will avoid areas 300 feet or more beyond ramps and floats. That these might negatively impact wildlife nesting, feeding, conservation areas, easements, and even the LP zone. There was speculation about what the Molloys intended to do, that maybe they wanted to just use this for a deck. There's even speculation as to the state of Mr. Molloy's health. He went way off. We offered a condition of approval here, because we still have to go get a U.S. Army Corps of Engineers permit or a non-jurisdiction letter, probably the permit. So we offered, we'd bring back that letter, and the CEO would approve of where we would store this in the winter. The idea is we'd hold this in at the end of the season. And yes, Mr. Miller might have to hire someone to pull it in. But we'd pull it in at the end of the season, pull it ashore, it would be outside the resource protection area. We would agree to those conditions of approval before we could get a building permit. The planning board denied that second application, 4-1. And it again denied it on the basis of Section 15C5. And after a little prodding from us, they gave us findings of fact and conclusions of law. What they said is that the facility is not consistent with surrounding characters and uses of the area because the unique character of Watts Cove beyond the dam, existing conservation easement and resource protection in the cove, tidal waterfowl and wading bird habitat, and the absence of existing floats in the cove. That's why we filed this appeal and why we asked to consolidate it with the prior one, so you can understand that together these applications and these appeals show an effort by the Molloys to refine the design and their application. Take a ramp that was 32 feet and 30 feet down to 26 feet. Take a float that had stuck out by 20 feet and now it sticks out by 12 feet. Instead of having it perpendicular to the water, turn it laterally in an area where the cove is almost 350 feet across. In order to try to provide safe water access from a rocky shoreline. Now, we have the burden here tonight to show that the planning board committed error of law, made findings that are without support of substantial evidence in the record, or that they have used their discretion. Well, here we have a first application where either there was no real decision, just a conclusory statement that they denied it because of Section 15C5, or there's a set of findings that they never adopted as a board. So it fails to meet the legal requirements. We have a second application where it was denied. Based on Section 15C5 of the Shoreland Zoning Ordinance. They cited no other provision as reasons for denying this application. So what does Section 15C5 require? And with the board's indulgence, I put together a poster board, and this is nothing more than Section 15C5 and my argument from my letter. So this is not new evidence. This is simply what we have in the record already. No objection?
I don't see that on here.
Well, okay. It's, so I just put that there to try to make it a little easier because it's really a two-part test that had to be applied by the planning board, and I don't believe they did it correctly.
I have no objection.
Thank you. Because the town of St. George Shoreline Zoning Ordinance had a previous one. It read just a little bit differently. It said the facility shall be no larger in dimension and went to the state Supreme Court. The state Supreme Court said, yeah, that it's probably a good argument here that this is not constitutionally valid. It's too vague. We don't know how it applies. The only reading we can give it is one that talks about looking at the facility, the ramp, and the float. In that case, how large it was, the ordinance has now been amended to say longer. So, based upon Lentine v. Town of St. George, is really a two-part test to be applied here. Is the length of that ramp and float facility larger than necessary? And is the length of that ramp and float facility consistent with the surrounding character and uses of the area? When you look at the planning board's decision and its reasons for that second decision, none of them talks about the length of that ramp and float. They talk about unique character of Watts Cove beyond the dam, existing conservation easement, resource protection in the cove, tidal waterfowl, and wading bird habitat, and absence of existing floats in the cove. Nothing in there says that this is longer than necessary. They make a finding on it, and they must not have denied it on that basis. But we also know that in the record, as I've recited to you tonight, there's evidence to support that Mr. Molloy showed that there's a reason for the float being the size that it is, the length that it is, and that it's no longer than necessary to achieve his needs, their needs, to just use it for recreational boating. That's it. So when they looked, but the board didn't really look at the length of the ramp float facility and whether the length of it was consistent with the surrounding character and uses of the area. They really were looking at is comparing the use They were looking at the ramp float and saying, does this belong in an area for conservation? Well, I understand the planning board is probably trying to do what it thought appropriate to protect the environment, but that's the town meeting's job. The town meeting adopts the ordinance that protects the environment, and then it's up to the planning board to apply that ordinance. They didn't apply the ordinance. They went beyond it. They can't do what they were creating an ordinance rather than applying the one that they've been given to administer. If you take a look at the length of that proposed ramp and float, and the question is it consistent with uses, the character and uses of the area? It's consistent with the 4x8 float that Mr. Stern's been using and putting in the water. It's consistent in Watts Cove with the Blanchett float, the 16-foot ramp and 12-foot float. And when you look at other similarly situated properties, also in environmentally sensitive areas with the IF&W designations and with land trust easements, if you look at those areas too, there are approximately, you know, that we've showed at least 10 floats and ramps in similar situations. And even if you look at that language and say, well, the ramp and float itself is supposed to be consistent with uses in the area, it is. It's consistent with residential uses. A ramp and float goes along with the residential use in this area is marine residential. It's also consistent with the floats in the cove and the floats in the area, as we've talked about. What the planning board did, when you take a look at it, let's just... One of the big contentions they have is that this is in the cove, not in the oceanfront. The ordinances make no distinction between cove and oceanfront areas. The ordinances don't prohibit floats where areas mud out from time to time. Again, that Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife designation for tidal waterfowl and wading bird habitat only comes into play when it's part of a permit process with DEP. The comprehensive plan designations for coastal wildlife, concentration zone, St. George River mud flats, and the St. George Conservation Commission, calling Watts Cove a significant ecological area, those are just parts of the comprehensive plan. In Conservation Commission statements, they're not enforceable. They're advisory. If the town feels strongly enough, it can take that advice and it can turn that into an ordinance that it can implement. But there's nothing here to implement. These are advisory documents. They're not enforceable. And that's the Nestle's case, if anyone wants to take a look. Contrary to the planning board findings, again, that resource protection bit is irrelevant because the ramp flow is allowed there, but we don't care. We're putting it in marine residential, and we'll store this in marine residential anyway. The fact that the Georges River Land Trust has an easement across the cove is irrelevant as well. The Molloy's land is not subject to that easement, and that land is at least 350 feet away. These are irrelevant to the issue of the length of the proposed ramp and flow. Goes beyond the planning board's authority to enforce, goes beyond it. So we believe that when you look at all of this together, when you look at the facts, when you look at the law, when you look at how it was applied, the planning board erred as a matter of law, that the facts do not bear out, substantial evidence does not bear out the decision, and in fact compel a contrary conclusion, and that the planning board abused its discretion by, instead of applying the ordinance they had, making up the ordinance they wanted. We therefore respectfully request this Board of Appeals to reverse the Planning Board's decision and issue the shoreline zoning permit for the Molloy's ramp and float, or if you believe you don't have the authority to yourself issue that permit, order the Planning Board to issue that permit. There's been a suggestion by Attorney Gibbons that this ought to be sent back to the Planning Board if you were to reverse this, so the Planning Board can look at all of the other criteria. This matter has been in front of the planning board under all of the criteria twice. It's held several meetings on this. It has denied this only on the basis of one criterion, Section 15C5. It's done it twice. It's had its chance. It implied is that the other criteria are satisfied. This is the only one it denied it under. We are asking that if you reverse this, it does not go back for remand for additional findings. but simply to order the planning board to issue the permit if you believe you can't. Which application, if you were to deny, if you were to reverse the planning board's decision, which application? We would be quite satisfied with the second application. It's the one that's the most refined, it's the narrowest, it has the least impact on the cove and the least impact on our neighbors. So that would be 26-foot aluminum ramp, 42 inches wide, a 12 by 16 foot, 12 feet long, angled, nestled across the shoreline, and we would agree to a condition of approval that before the building permit issues, we have to present a U.S. Army Corps of Engineers permit or a non-jurisdiction letter, and we have to show to the code enforcement officers reasonable satisfaction where this will be stored when we're not using it. Thank you, and welcome any questions you may have.
Any questions from the board? Mr. Hodges, you're good? Okay, thank you. The next one we would hear is testimony of the parties to the action. That would be you, sir.
Paul Gibbons, I represent Matt Stearns. He lives on the cove, in the back of the cove. His, unlike what we're represented here, his 4x8 float hasn't been in the water for quite some time. Purposely leaves it on shore. He doesn't use it. The more important aspect about this is there are two sides to every story. And you, listening to Mr. Malloy's presentation, you would think, well, there is absolutely no reason why the planning board would deny this twice. And how could they possibly deny it, given what you just heard? But what you just heard isn't right. It doesn't tell you the whole story. It doesn't begin to tell you the whole story. In fact, it leaves critical information. For one thing, he said, represented to you, that there was no way that the planning board could look at the environmental issues and deny this permit. Section 16 of the ordinance says one of the requirements that they didn't get to is that the proposal will not have an adverse impact on spawning grounds, fish, aquilife, bird, or other wildlife habitat. That's in your ordinance. That pertains to the environment. That's a great misrepresentation of what the ordinance says. A ribald misrepresentation. The other issue is this. One big issue is this. I want to start off by saying that I don't believe that if you find fault with the planning board, and I don't think you will, but if you did, you'd have to send this back to the planning board. You cannot find facts for them. If they didn't find facts, you can't overrule those facts. And Section 16B of the ordinance, one of the sections that I just read, has a list of 9 criteria that they didn't bother to look at because they found a criteria that they found wasn't met, so they didn't keep going. There are criteria that they didn't look at. And they have to look at it before they can grant a permit. They have to look at whether the proposal will maintain safe and healthful conditions, will not result in water pollution, will not have an adverse impact on fish, on spawning ground fish and aquatic life and wildlife habitat, will conserve shore cover, visual as well as actual points of access to inland coastal waters, will protect archaeological and historical resources, will not adversely affect existing commercial or maritime activities in the commercial fisheries area, which is by here, will avoid problems associated with floodplain as it conforms with other provisions of the land use ordinance, Section 15. They didn't look at those things. Because when they got to Section 15, they said, you don't meet this, you're done. So, if you should somehow find the planning board made a mistake and to send it back, the planning board cannot issue a permit unless they find these conditions have been met. And you can't find those for them. You can't find facts for them. You didn't hear the testimony. You discussed that with your lawyer. But they have to review it again. More importantly, this case, this Lentine case versus the son of St. George. Here's what happened here. This fellow Lentine proposes a wharf to put his boat on, recreational boat on. And the planning board says, that's too big. You can't build that. That's way too big for what you want. So they appeal it to the Board of Appeals, and they uphold the planning board, and they go to the law court. And the law court says, well, you know, part of what you said was, in denying this permit, you said that you denied it because it was inconsistent with the character and use of the area under Section 15C. And they said, that's too broad, you can't do that. That has to be related to the size of the float. In other words, the size of the float has to be such that it's inconsistent with the area around it, not just that it's inconsistent with the area around it. So you made a mistake, planning board. You committed an error of law. They found that. And you know what the final decision was? They upheld the decision of the planning board. They said, the record did not compel a contrary result. We're not going to flip your decision. Your decision, because the record showed that you didn't make a mistake, that it was compelling that the other side was entitled to a permit, we're going to uphold your permit. And the same thing applies here today. I will show you how the record on appeal doesn't require a contrary decision. It does not require a contrary decision. And therefore, they can't meet their burden of proof. And now, one of the purposes of zoning is to prevent incompatible uses from being next to each other, so one destroys the other. And the planning board, looking at this proposal by the Molloys, believed, once you look at the record, that what they were proposing was incompatible with the area. And they also weighed that against the Molloys' need for this plant, well, for this system that they proposed. This $14,000 ramp and float system. They compared that need against what the environment was like. And they said, you know, it doesn't work out. It does not work out. What they showed was, in the testimony, was that Watts Cove is a very pristine place. It's an environmental sensitive area. There's wildlife and habitat area. There are no floats there, despite what he's saying. There are no floats appears there in the water being used, none. And it is a very pristine area because there's nothing built in the water there. And there's a reason for that, obviously. It's because it's almost all the time mudflats. And the testimony you just heard, or the argument you just heard, that is available, that you can use, that he can use his floats 5 to 6 hours a day, is contrary to what our expert says. See, we too had an expert in both hearings. They didn't have an expert in the first hearing. We had a fellow named Paul Lieber, who was an environmentalist, and he testified, without contradiction in the first hearing, that the proposed float and rope ramp system would interfere with the wading bird habitat. It would be a threat to them. And he was concerned about the noise, and he told the board that if there's too much noise, those birds would leave forever. And that part of it, about the noise and the boys and the birds leaving forever, was not contradicted by anybody. And that same testimony was true in the second hearing. He also pointed out, when there was in the second hearing, the lawyers had an expert who said, well, they didn't think it was going to be a problem. And he pointed out that when it comes to floats and ramps and noise, you really can't control how much noise is going to be there. You may have a prediction, if it's used a certain way, there may not be any noise, but if it's used differently, it could cause a great deal of noise, and noise is relative. On days when there is no wind, you know, noise travels a lot. And the question is, what effect will that have on these birds? He said, it will be a real threat to them moving away forever. So the planning board gives this testimony and says, well, this has been designated as a wildlife habitat by the state of Maine. And we know, we see the birds here, we see all kinds of different birds. And there's all kinds of different birds, by the way. And so if you saw a sandpiper come close to your dock, that doesn't mean a heron is going to be that close to your dock when people are there. It doesn't mean the other species of birds are going to be that close to your dock when you're there. So the problem was, we have expert testimony that said that it was a problem. It was a problem. And so if you say, well, let's look at the need for this. And the question was really was, when you have to take a canoe or a kayak or a rubber boat and put it in the water in this cove, do you need a rampant foam system? Especially one like this, that this big. Do you need something that big? And the record shows that you don't. There was no proof that you could use something smaller. Nothing. Just this is what we want. So, given that you have such small boats involved, the harbor at high tide is only 5 feet deep. Most of the time it's mudflats. The ability to use it is very limited. Very limited. And the need is very small. And then you have the risk. The silent risk. That this, what someone thinks is okay, isn't okay. That the birds go away forever because of noise, or because they're so afraid, or because of the structure itself. Mr. Malloy even has a record will show a mooring in the middle of the river for a kayak. I never heard of a mooring for a kayak before. And I know this from being a person with kayaks. I don't know how you could ever get into a boat that's a kayak moored to something without falling over. That'd be quite a trick. That's quite a trick. So the point is that there is no need for this. And when you raise that need against the environmental threat, the planning board made the right decision and the record shows the right decision. If you look at the actual words of the planning board in their decision, while they do not mention the length of the float, they say, quote, the facility is not consistent with the surrounding character and uses of the area. That's what the ordinance says. They go on to say, because of the unique character of Watts Cove beyond the dam, existing conservation easements, resource protection in the cove, the tides, meaning the severe tides that are there, wildlife and wading bird habitat designation, and the absence of existing floats in the water, they said what he proposes and what's there are incompatible with each other. They're incompatible with each other. You heard him have testimony that said, well, over in this area of the town, there's wild bird, wading bird habitats, and they allowed floats down there, and therefore I should have mine. But they didn't have the testimony of a wildlife habitat, of an expert saying, in this instance, in this cove, with this width, with this tide, it's going to be a problem. No testimony didn't occur in those other areas. The planning board, you see, had someone telling them something that they paid attention to. There is a problem. So it's a problem that's real. And I have what I call, there's such a thing as the goose gander rule. What's good for the goose, you know, is good for the gander. One of their arguments is that everyone else can have one of these other coves, so we should be able to have it too. Follow that logic forward, and you can have all kinds of these things in that one Watts Cove and destroy the wildlife habitat. It's okay. The ordinance says it's okay. It's okay, is their argument. Well, the ordinance has protections. Unlike what he says, the ordinance does have protections for that kind of activity and its effect that it would have. You weigh the risk of a total loss of a wildlife habitat against someone's need to be able to have a canoe and a rubber boat on a rampant boat system that costs $14,000 when no one else around you has one. You say, well, that risk-reward ratio doesn't work. And that's exactly what the planning board did.
So you see, there is reason why the decision should stand. And I would point out to you, on the first appeal, they didn't have anyone to rebut our expert testimony at all. On the second appeal, the fellow said, oh, we think it's going to be all right. But he had to admit that he had no control over how much noise is going to emanate from that dock and pier to ramp the float system. He had no control over that. And so it could be a problem, but take the risk. Take the risk. The beauty of... I have a friend of mine who is a lawyer who writes in the New Yorker magazine. He said something once... He comes from Maine. He said something once that I thought was quite remarkable. He said, people invest in attractive places until they're no longer attractive. And that's kind of like what happens when people don't have zoning. They don't pay attention to things. It's beautiful now and then harmful. That's how it's beautiful. There's no floats. The birds live there. There's mudflats for them to feed on. And you can do something to take that away. You can make it all go away. You can take the risk. And no matter what Mr. Cassafica says to you, he never took away that risk. He didn't say anything to take away that risk. If these were other circumstances, it would be different. So I call upon you to call upon your common sense. If you look at things, like even in lakes, you don't allow permanent docks in lakes. You just have a small dock. It's limited how big you can have it, normally. But you're allowed to have it because you can use it 24 hours a day because there's water there. In this instance here, there's very little water. It completely drains at low tide. And the high tide changes every single day. So your usage is very limited. Archive says it's about 2 hours. That's the most you can use it. And if you have to pick different times of the day, this high tide, you have to pick the time. And then you have to be back within an hour because you might be stuck in the middle of the mud. How much of a need do you have for a floating dock for a canoe and a rubber boat? Again, compare that to the risk. The burden of proof is on the applicant to show you that the record compels you to find that they are entitled to this float and walk system. It compels it. When you think about how pristine Watts Cove is, how the mudflats provide a habitat for these wild birds. When you think about that, you can just say, oh, there's no way they met their burden to show that the record shows that they're absolutely entitled to this. If it weren't for the wildlife habitat there, if it weren't for other things, if it weren't for the fact that there was a resource protection area there, or a conservation easement in this cove, and that there are no ramps or floats in this cove that nobody's using, maybe the circumstances would be different. But they aren't different. But they are different. And those differences make a difference. So, the record does not compel you to say, oh, I looked at these facts, and absolutely, the lawyers are entitled to put what they want right there. It will not cause a problem whatsoever. It will not violate our ordinance. You cannot say that. And just like the Supreme Court said in the Lentil case, we looked at the record. Even though you made a mistake of law, we looked at the record. And your burden was to prove that the record compelled a contrary result. And they said, you know what? The planning board, and I'll say it to St. George, did the right thing. The record supported their decision. And the record before you supports this decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, if I could be heard in rebuttal very briefly.
No, if you don't mind, the first chance is for the board to ask any questions of this gentleman they'd like. Any questions by anybody on the board at this time? Mr. Hodges, no comment or question? Okay, yep, this time we would take rebuttal.
Thank you. Try to be brief. I think we're trying to tell the whole story and try to tell it truthfully. I don't think I've ever been accused of making a ribald representation. Not even a bald or bald-faced representation. But at any rate, you know, the planning board picked the criterion that it did to deny this twice. And what I'm trying to say here is they cited environmental concerns with regard to this standard. There are other standards. But you know, they didn't fail to acknowledge the Section 16D standards. You take a look at Section Item 13 in the record. We addressed each and every one of them as part of the application and explained why we met them. And in the hearing, if you look at the minutes, we went through each and one of the, every one of those criteria. And people talked about all of those criteria. But they didn't deny it because of 16D4. They denied it because of 15C5. And apparently, you know, what appears to us as we look at this is, yes, the planning board did engage in balancing of the need against the environmental threat. There's nothing in the ordinance that talks about need, just that it be no longer than what you need. But not that you have to show a need. The Malays simply want to be able to put a float out for their boats. That's it. So, and it's, to be sure, it's seasonal. They are proposing a seasonal float, not permanent. With regard to the time that the tide is in, Mr. Malloy's been consistent. It's a minimum of 5.5, sometimes 6, a little more hours per tide that there is water. There is water that would allow the float to be used. He lives there. As far as, you know, need is not a criterion. As far as the Lentine case, yes, it went back and the law court said, even reading this the right way now so we can support this, we go back and we support the planning board. That was because there was evidence that would show that there was danger of an ice pileup that would have occurred if this had been permitted. Then it would threaten neighbors' property and businesses. Any such a threat here. The harbor master's already said there's no navigational threat. This is a seasonal matter. So this is different. And as far as the leaper testimony that birds would leave forever, I think that was refuted by Mr. Emerson from Stantec for us. And, you know, if a float in the water would cause birds to leave forever, Mr. Stearns had one out there, and Belanchek's had one, Mr. Belanchek had one out there before. Birds are still there. You see photographs in that. So, the ordinance doesn't look at need. The ordinance looks at these standards. The planning board applied a standard. We believe it did it incorrectly, and they did engage in a balancing. But the balancing is not what's called for under the ordinance. It's not called for in that section, and it's beyond what the ordinance allows. Thank you.
Very good. Any questions of the board of either of the people?